Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron. That was Kita with Dig Deep. And I want to welcome our councillor, Lisa Thompson, to the studio. Good morning.
Morning, Aaron. Morning, everyone. I hope everyone is well and that they are relieved that the power is back on in most places in Whangaroa, other than Tiuku and one other small spot.
Yeah, down Cogswell Road, just a couple of little spots.
Yeah.
According to the outages map, although I know I was talking to Craig this morning, who lives up on one of the farms in the foothills of Karioi, and I think they've got some line went down on the property where he is, so I imagine there might still be a few farms like that.
Yeah, I can imagine that there will be some spots because of trees falling down or lines falling, all of that sort of stuff, that there might be other communities, you know, rural homes, that the power is out. I know that my sister out on Phillips Road, they were out from the when we our power went out here in Raglan, they'd already lost power by 9 o'clock that morning.
Right. Has she got it back?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And for most people, the they had some big generators arrive, three big generators. I went to have a look at the substation. That got most of Raglan going yesterday afternoon. Did it get? So you're out by the Kite Surf Beach. What's the proper name for that?
Wainamu
Beach. Did you get power out there when that came on in the afternoon?
No. Yeah. Our power came on when we were asleep. So
yeah. Yeah. So because I talked to the operations manager at Well Networks, and he said they bought those three generators out, and he said on the fringes may or may not get power.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when we came back in from Hamilton yesterday, two of those big generators had just turned up out at the substation. So that was pretty amazing, you know, managing to bring that in.
Where do they keep those things lying around? Their whole, if you hadn't seen the people, they're the size of a shipping container. They are a shipping container.
Yeah, 20-foot one as well, not a small 10-foot.
And three of them turned up.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they sit around. They have those on standby somewhere, I guess.
They obviously do, because they couldn't materialise from nowhere. And then, of course, there were all of the other generators that were mobilised, the smaller ones around specific areas in town as well.
We were lucky at my place because we're near the rest home. I thought there was no problems. When I came down to work yesterday morning, and I was like, oh, everything's going to be fine. And but no, not here in the town hall. So we have our own generator, and we were on that for most of yesterday. Yeah, till they got those three generators at the substation.
You've got a generator at home?
No, we didn't. But we didn't need one because we were near the rest home.
Yeah. So that was awesome, eh? Yeah. We were really lucky because we've got a generator, and we're on gas at home. We've got a big hot water cylinder, so, you know, we had hot water, so we could have had hot showers. And then we're really well resourced in candles and also the power packs.
Yeah, you sound a little more prepared than the average household where you are.
Well, it's because I have a partner who, you know, did the civil defence and went down to the South Island and the flooding and things like that. So that sort of critical analysis, our household is pretty well prepared. But we still didn't have, you know, specific boxes of gear if we had to evacuate the house.
Yeah.
You know, so we could have got things together because everything's in one place, you know, all the candles and things like that. But we don't have boxes that we can actually just uplift and chuck in the car to go should something happened to the house, or if there was flooding, that sort of stuff. So we are going to do that this weekend, so we're prepared. And it brings home to me, Aaron, because it wasn't anticipated by Well or by council or by other services that we would be out, that we would have such a large outage. You know, when it's affected all of Whangaroa, that's a significant outage, and that ours was for a period of time.
Yeah,
so it shows that we need to really build household resilience, that people are prepared, because there were still people who weren't prepared, that didn't have the basics like candles or...
Well, this was interesting because when I was looking at the hours earlier, it was Auckland that had a severe wind warning. We just had a severe wind watch. And I didn't keep up with that through the day if that changed. But for me, at the start of the day, I was assuming that it would be windy but nothing bad. And when you look at the outage map, there's a clear line running from Raglan heading to the northeast of outages. And the problem we had was that I think the problem spot was probably somewhere on the divvy in a forest, somewhere like that. Like, that's why they couldn't find it very quickly. So until they found that, which must have happened late yesterday, we were all a bit helpless.
That's exactly right. So, you know, it wasn't something that happened in Raglan, but it was something that happened.
We did have a tree knocked over down Wallace Street as well. But
and there were trees. There were quite a few trees blown down around the place. We even had a smaller tree blown down on our place as well.
But I did bump into people. I bumped into a lady yesterday who'd come into town because she had no power, no heating, no communication devices. She didn't know what was going on. She was hoping there would be a central point telling her what was going on. I said, "Do you have a radio?" She didn't have a radio. I said, "What about in your car?" "No, not in her car." So, and she was hoping there would be, and I told her what I knew, but then I went down and I saw the staff at the council office and said, "Have you had people come in and asking you what's going on?" They're like, "Yeah, we have, but not that many, but they've had them." But they didn't know anything either because they're just running a library and an admin office. They're not, you know,
and they still,
the heart of the team.
Amy still gets the updates from John Brown with the comms and things like that.
At the same time I do.
Yeah. So, you know, we get information as soon as we possibly can get information. And I guess what I'd encourage people to do is, in the best of your ability or capacity, you know, have enough for 3 days, and if you can, get a little transistor radio, one of the old school radios
with batteries,
and put those in a plastic container. If you haven't got a mobile phone, or if you know the mobile service, as it did, went down for a period of time, and have Raglan radio, and have Raglan radio on dial. Set up in your little transistor radio, because Aaron, your comms are always so fantastic and one source of truth, because you're liaising with John Brown at council. You were liaising with as well. It was great. Yeah. You know, we sat at our table on our deck yesterday afternoon, just before 3 o'clock, with my neighbours, waiting for your for the interview that you had with the manager from Well, which was awesome.
Yeah.
So
I would have liked to have got him earlier in the day, but any time is good.
And the thing is, at the end of the day, they're busy doing the business. You know, they are really responding to need, so they're on high alert doing that, Mahi. So sometimes it does take time for comms to come out. So that's why being resilient is so important.
I agree with that, but I think also in this day and age, all the comms departments need to understand that, like, because people can get information really quickly and they expect it quickly, and when they're not getting it, that makes them worried. Whereas in the past, everyone would have just accepted it'll be a few hours before we find out. So I would like them to start doing things by saying, okay, we don't know much yet. We've got 27 people out doing this, and we've got this happening, so that people know that at least something's happening. And that's my thought of being in between the comms departments and the public. And Waikato District Council, John Brown, was actually good. He gave me some information that Well Networks weren't telling me, which was really useful just to let people know, hey, we've got some more generators coming. So, you know, something is happening.
Yeah, and that's why it's good having a good relationship with our comms team.
Yeah.
And John is really responsive.
Yes.
And he does, you know, he's really great at getting the comms out as soon as he's got it. And he's good at making sure that it's the appropriate comms, so it's not, you know, ad hoc or incorrect information that we've got.
Yeah, well, and that's everyone's worry, of course, is they want to be able to confirm things properly before they put out official comms.
Yeah, but that's exactly right, because you don't want to add to people's anxiety. But again, it's a balance, because you do have to have some resilience and resourcing, so then you can be as efficient as you can. Self-sufficient.
Yeah, because I was starting to worry. I was thinking, okay, if this keeps going, because at one point I was thinking, are we just going to have the same thing for 2 nights in a row? And we're going to get people who are starting to struggle. They're cold. It's winter. They haven't got any heating. Is this becoming a civil defence thing at this point in time? And you said to me off the air just before that actually people need to be ready to survive 3 days. That's the reality of civil defence, I think.
It is the reality. And if one just looks at, say, Cyclone Gabrielle on the East Coast, how long those communities were without power. So it's really important that we are as prepared as we can be, because we're actually going to be facing more and more of these events over time, as we've seen, you know. And the storm period actually didn't last that long, but it has an impact far more reaching than the time of the storm itself. So it's really important to be prepared, and you know what that looks like is something that we probably need to do some education with our community on what that might look like for each household. And there are people who won't have the resources to be prepared for 3 days. So how can we support them to do that? Because a road might be washed out, there lots of power lines might be down. So we'll have to build that resilience through education, making sure people have enough food for 3 days, and it might be that they may be without heating for that 3 days. So what that look like in terms of having enough blankets or clothing, all of those sorts of things. So
And help from neighbours is probably going to be
help from neighbours, checking on also if you know people are living on their own, if you know you've got elderly nearby. Make sure to check on people, just to ensure, knock on the door, ensure that they're okay. Share resources. If you've got a generator, tell your neighbours, hey, look, I've got a generator, come and
or
charge
solar
your phones.
Power. A lot of people have got solar panels now, and they're like saying to their mates, yeah, if you want to charge your phone, get round.
Yeah.
Community House has phone chargers.
They didn't have any power.
No. So it was bad advice I gave someone.
Yeah, no, they didn't have any power.
But then we were like, oh, no, you can go down to the library. The library was full of people.
Yeah, of course.
And there's this table with like about 10 people all around it sitting really jammed in next to each other, and all with their laptops out, and I think they're all working.
So it's really
all different companies, jobs, but all together. Yeah.
All working from the library instead of home.
Yeah.
So it's important to be as prepared as you can be in instances like this. So part of the community response, will be doing some work, and yet to talk to Dennis and the team about that, showing people what does 3 days self-sufficiency look like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the Civil Defence Response Team. Or it's not called that. I keep calling it Civil Defence because that's what people know.
Yeah.
So now the other issue was the sewage network. There's 24 pump stations. Some of them, with the power gone, were in danger of overflowing. And
that's,
I know council...
That's right.
So what did council do to mobilise? Because there's normally only about one person out here.
That's exactly right. We had a whole team. You might have seen the orange trucks, the sucker trucks that were out here. We also had extra hands on deck. And you might have, if you live Raglan West like I do, you would have seen yesterday morning that one of the council water care staff were out by the pump station by the Papakainga on Wainui Road by the Marae.
Yeah.
And with a generator on the back hooked up into that one, and then the generators were moving to various spots to our key pumping stations like on Wallace Street, Nihi Nihi. So we had to move those resourcing around. And so it was all hands on deck over the hours that the power outage was out. When the power's out, we've got telemetry, which sets off the alarms for our pumping stations. And so if the power's out, it makes it really... Well, the power's out.
Yeah.
So, having those pump stations and the generators at key spots are really important. So it was having enough manpower to do that and getting the generators out as well.
Yeah. So you've got other council staff across the divvy who presumably came out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You would have seen, I don't know if you would have noticed, Aaron, while you were in here, the trucks coming in and coming and going. There were water care staff out at the water treatment plant, where the little shed is just before Rocket on the left-hand side. So we had staff out there.
Yeah.
We had the generator.
That's to send the normal wastewater, treated wastewater out into the
harbour, yeah.
So at the right time.
Yeah.
And to stop the sewage ponds from overflowing.
So, there was a lot of hands on deck. So I've asked for clarity about was any discharge sewage, raw sewage, into the receiving waterways. So I'm just getting clarity on that.
So at the moment, we've been told yesterday afternoon, council was saying there had been some spillages, but it sounded like some small overflows.
They were located and they cleaned them up right away. So, at the pump station. So we've yet to confirm if it's gone out into the harbour, but we haven't had any signage or anything like that put up.
But you didn't have a person all the time at the right place to check every possible situation.
Yeah, and then even the refuelling of the generators, you had to have people being able to refuel the generators, then move the generators to the next pump station, all of those things. So it's quite a plan logistically when we hadn't anticipated such a power outage of this nature.
Yeah, yeah. So the warning to not collect shellfish in the harbour is precautionary. because there was it wasn't possible to cover every single angle with a camera to, to look
and
at
until,
everything.
Until I've got that report back, I'm not clear on the impact into the wider environment.
It may be perfectly fine, but it may not be.
Yeah, it may not be. So we'll update you as soon as we have that information.
Okay, all right. That's all of that. Now, do you want to talk about activation Toitū Te Tiriti?
Yeah, so we went, people may not be aware, but yesterday was a national call from Te Pāti Māori, but actually it was even it was for people to come together to stand for Te Tiriti of Waitangi as our founding document, but also because it was budget day at Parliament, and so we really wanted to send a clear message to the coalition government about the voice of Māori. And so I went to the Kirikiriroa Hamilton activation that took place. It started at Te Kāho Health, just on Wairere Drive, and we did a walk up to the university, to the marae at Waikato University. We didn't disrupt any roads. We walked along the footpath.
Wasn't there some disruption happening somewhere? There was a. They were calling a car koi, like a hikoi with cars.
Yes, and
which is an interesting.
Yeah,
that I don't know who invented that word.
Yeah, that wasn't us. We
That was on the Harbour Bridge in Auckland.
Yeah,
I saw.
Yeah, and so we didn't do that. We just were on the footpath, and there was probably well over 1,000 people. It was really neat from kids. There were lots of people. It wasn't just Māori people with their flags. So it was a neat day, and it wasn't a protest like some people have said. It's a protest. It was an act. It was deliberate to be called an activation, and we were told that it was a peaceful activation of standing up for Māori rights. So it was a beautiful morning, and Tūreiti Moksum, she was speaking at the university along with two rangatahi, actually, a young Māori guy and a young Māori woman. They were beautiful
so
speakers.
So Tūreiti, she's the head of Te Kōhao Health?
Yes.
I interviewed her years ago.
She's called Lady Yes.
Tūreiti.
So it was lovely. So she spoke and others spoke. So it was a great morning, and we saw lots of people from Raglan there, which was really neat. And in fact, I saw lots of people I knew there.
So can I ask, some people will be asking, were you there in your capacity as district councillor?
Or I was in my capacity as district councillor, and because I'm Māori.
Okay.
You know, you want to show your support, and you know that I was very supportive and a staunch advocate for Māori representation at council from the get-go in my first term, so I don't think it would surprise anyone, my views, particularly...
I'm thinking of other people's views, so...
You know, and last week, under urgency, the coalition government pushed through the legislation to amend the Māori wards legislation, so and gave people 4 days to submit, 4 or 5 days to make a submission, and that closed on Wednesday just gone. So, you know, I feel really passionate about this because it's not just equity for Māori, it's about a relationship with everyone in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Were there other councillors on the district council there?
I actually didn't see anyone there, and I don't believe there were others, but I can't be sure. But there was a lot of people there.
Yeah,
I went with a crew from Raglan, so our car was packed. We had 5 of us from Raglan that went. So it was neat. And we saw staff there from Waikato District Council. Yeah, it was a neat morning.
And I guess, I mean, looking at the government, they're just keen to push everything, bulldoze everything, and never mind the consequences, even to their own political fortunes, it would seem. So the end result of the bill, what will it do? Will it repeal some regulations, some legislation?
It will disestablish Māori wards, basically.
Okay, so once it passes, it means at the next election there won't be the next local body
election?
There
will be. So councils can either disestablish their Māori wards before the 2025 local body elections, or they can go to a binding poll, which would mean that... 5%.
So do they have to do one or the other?
There's three. So to disestablish, Māori wards to repeal the decision on Māori wards. So if a council had made the decision to have Māori wards, they could repeal that or go to a binding poll in the 2025 local body elections, which would mean that 5% of voters, not Māori, anyone, can vote to disestablish the Māori wards for the 2028 elections. So,
is it 5% can vote or 5% can
call for a binding poll?
Call for the binding poll. Yeah, which will then be a 50% thingy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I should use the word thingy.
No, and it means that, you know, in the if you've got 20%, 26% Māori within the Waikato District Council, we're outnumbered. So anyone could call for a binding poll.
Not all of us Pākehā are going to vote against it.
No, but only two councils have been successful in establishing Māori wards without going to a binding poll because predominantly their constituents were Māori. So it always works against equity.
Yeah, and the thing I keep hammering, because I know that people will get caught up in arguments about
somehow Māori have an extra voice, but actually you're only two out of district council, Waikato District Council, for example, there's only two seats out of 14 that are Māori.
So yeah, so I sometimes just put all that aside and say, look, we're supposed to be, we're not just in a democracy, we're in a representative democracy. And Māori haven't had representation.
And we have because of a treaty.
And that hasn't been acknowledged properly either. And what is the actual problem? What did Pākehā miss out on when there's two Māori seats out of 13 at the council?
14.
Right? 14. 13, 14. What's the difference? Like, it's not enough to actually
make a difference.
To force things through. What is happening? Yeah, it doesn't make a difference in terms of vote. It makes a difference in terms of bringing information to the table so council can make good decisions. And that's just the practicalities of how we run things in this country. And I want that diversity on the table because then you get better decisions.
You always get better decisions when you've got diversity.
It's the same for the radio station. The more diversity we've got, the better job we can do. And on our committee, when we run the committee, the more different people we have, the more different perspectives, the better job we can do. So to me, that's the unarguable point, really.
But it's because it's Māori. That's why.
Well, yeah. I tend to think about what objections are going to be out there, and I just think that one's very hard to object to.
It is, but people will.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Unfortunately, that's why I know, and I appreciate that. And it's something to really celebrate. And it was interesting, and I think I said it in my last interview or the interview before, when we were talking to the author of the Kareoi book, he had said, imagine if we in Aotearoa New Zealand, if we took everything Māori out of our national identity, what would we have left?
I know. You see Pākehā people doing haka when they're overseas, for goodness sakes. It's like...
Yeah, you wouldn't have...
It's the thing that is different. Otherwise, we're just a little England.
Or you wouldn't have the ability to have someone like Ruby Tui getting a whole stadium standing up and singing a Māori waiata.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone could do that. So, you know, that diversity, as you've rightly pointed out, is important and something to be really celebrated in our country.
Can we just take a quick sidestep? I've just had a couple of emails come through. Extreme Waste saying they are back open. The site's back open today.
Yay,
they were closed yesterday. And also, Well Networks have sent something through this morning. They might have put out something this on social media as well, but I've got it here. After a concerted effort from our team's power successfully restored to the majority of customers in Raglan and Tiuku. Yep, we knew that. We're down now to a low number of customers that remain without power, and restoration efforts remain our priority today. We've got all available resource working on this, and we've called in contractor resource to help with the amount of damage we're needing to repair. So even though most of us got our power back, I suspect there's quite a few things that still need to be done. They say we understand this is a frustrating situation, and we thank everyone for their patience and understanding as we continue to work to restore power supply. So, yeah, things are returning to normal.
Whatever normal is.
Yeah, till the next time.
Yeah, and normal is when you're able to boil water and have a nice cup of tea.
There were a few cafes still working yesterday. It was funny, downtown there was like a division. This top end where I am, nothing was happening. Only the liquor shop was open, I think. was not anyway. But on the other side of the intersection, Wild Cafe, I've never seen it so busy.
And I think they ran out of food and everything as well.
Probably. They wouldn't have been expecting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was hard out, and the library was as full as I've ever seen it. Lisa, was there anything else you wanted to bring? We'll keep away from community board issues today and just anything that's happening uppermost in your mind, because we've had
Deliberations in council and chambers from the annual plan on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. And as you mentioned before, all of our council hui now are on live stream. So yes, if you fancied dialing into that, you're more than welcome. That's on Zoom. You can watch it. You can watch it later. Yeah, you can watch it. Everything's on our Waikato District Council YouTube, so you can go back and watch all of our hui that since they've been live streamed. You can watch it live streamed.
We can watch your performance, Lisa.
Yeah, exactly.
Thumping the table.
I know.
Demanding. No, I'm being silly.
Got to watch out that you don't say anything untoward.
Well, that has happened in the past with this council.
It has, but not lately. So if you fancy watching any of our council meetings, feel free to. They're on our live stream, and you can go back and watch them because they're on our YouTube channel. But other than that, just wish everyone a great weekend for the long weekend, and long may the sunshine last.
And we haven't heard anything about the Tuku Recycling Centre, the solution to the issues there.
No.
I know there's consultation been going on with the community out there. So
we need to just wait for that.
Yeah, okay. All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Aaron.